a slow orange and black desert lizard. You probably wouldn't look at it and think, oh yes, the future of medicine. But that is exactly where the blockbuster drugs behind Ozempic and Wegovy trace their roots, according to a Scratchpad explainer called The Lizard, the Hormone, and the Drugs That Ate the World. So you're seeing the biggest medical story of the decade? This massive shift in how we treat obesity and diabetes actually begins with a Gila monster? Specifically, it's venom. Today, we are tracing how scientists took a wild survival chemical from that lizard and kicked off a multi-decade molecular arms race.
Let's back up to the biology. You eat a piece of cake. Your body reacts completely differently than if a doctor injected that exact same amount of sugar directly into your veins. It's a physiological quirk called the incretin effect, where your gut senses food arriving and sends chemical messengers ahead to prime the pancreas.
Wait, so your gut is basically texting the pancreas that sugar is on the way? If you inject it straight into a vein, you're bypassing the entire early warning system?
Precisely. If you bypass the digestive tract entirely, the gut never gets to send that warning signal. And the star player here is a hormone called GLP-1, which is an incretin. Think of it as a metabolic advance scout. When you eat, GLP-1 pulls off a spectacular multitasking feat. First, it tells the pancreas to release insulin, but only when blood glucose is high, which prevents dangerous blood sugar crashes. At the same time, it suppresses glucagon, slows gastric emptying, so food leaves your stomach gradually, and directly dials down the hunger signals in your brain.
So it's the ultimate metabolic multi-tool. It handles the pancreas, the stomach, and the brain all at once. But wait, if our bodies are already producing this incredibly efficient system every time we eat, why did we need to engineer these massive blockbuster drugs? Why not just use what we've got?
Because natural GLP-1 is incredibly fragile. It's essentially a metabolic post-it note with a self-destruct timer. There's an enzyme in our bodies called DPP-4 that relentlessly hunts down and chops up GLP-1. From the moment your gut releases it, natural GLP-1 has a half-life of only about 2 minutes. By the time you've finished a few bites of your meal, the hormone is already being annihilated. You can't build a viable daily or weekly treatment out of a molecule that vanishes that fast.
2 minutes? That is wild. It's barely enough time to register you've started eating. So the whole foundation of this multi-billion-dollar drug revolution wasn't just finding the hormone. It was solving a brutal timing problem. That durability is the whole ballgame. It was a decades-long half-life arms race. The biological blueprint was absolutely beautiful, but human physiology had put a strict 2-minute clock on it. To turn GLP-1 into a real-world treatment, scientists had to figure out how to stretch that fleeting signal from minutes to hours, and eventually to a full week. So how do you even begin to fix that? Who fires the first shot in that arms race? Because earlier, you mentioned a lizard, and I have been waiting for us to get back to the Gila monster.
Flash paper. You light it, there's a bright burst, and then it's just gone. That is your natural hormone. To make a real drug, scientists had to somehow make that flame burn steady for days. And the first break came from a pretty bizarre place, the venom of a Gila monster. In 2005, we got Generation 1, exenatide. It was based on a lizard peptide that resisted that shredding enzyme, but it still only lasted long enough for a twice-daily shot.
Right, and twice daily is a tough sell for a long-term drug. So by 2009, Novo Nordisk took a different path for Generation 2. Instead of using the lizard's chemistry, they went back to human GLP-1, made it 97% identical, but they bolted on a little fatty acid chain. It basically lets the drug hitch a ride on albumin proteins in your blood, shielding it from being destroyed. And that bought them a once-daily injection, liraglutide.
It's like giving the hormone a heavy winter coat so it can survive the storm. But even once daily is a lot of needles. Which brings us to the third generation, starting in 2017, semaglutide.
How did they push that daily barrier all the way out to a full week?
By doing even more extreme molecular tailoring. They tweaked the structure so tightly that it resists the enzyme and clings to those blood proteins even longer. The result is a half-life of about 7 days. That's Ozempic and Wegovy. And that one-shot-a-week convenience changed everything, delivering weight loss of about 15% in trials. We went from a 2-minute biological flash to a steady week-long signal. It's an extraordinary engineering ladder, but eventually you hit a ceiling with just one hormone.
A master key ring. For years, we were focusing on just one key, the GLP-1 key, to open up metabolic control. But then scientists wondered, what if we hook multiple keys together and unlock 2 or 3 cellular doors at the exact same time? That is the shift to dual and triple agonists. We are moving from single hormone mimicking to stacking them together. To put a number on that, semaglutide, which is just GLP-1, already got people to about a 15% weight loss in trials. When you start adding keys to this ring, what actually changes? What are the new targets? So instead of just asking what the new targets are, it's more about how they work together. Take tirzepatide, which you might know as Mounjaro or Zepbound. It's a dual agonist. It hits GLP-1, but it also activates a second receptor called GIP. It's like having a co-pilot. And in head-to-head trials, specifically SURPASS-2, this dual action actually beat semaglutide on both blood sugar control and weight loss.
Wait, so if 2 keys beat 1, then the logic says 3 keys must be even more powerful? I know there's this triple agonist, retatrutide, that researchers are getting really excited about. How does adding a third hormone even work?
It sounds counterintuitive, but the third key is glucagon. Normally, glucagon raises blood sugar, but when you combine it with GLP-1 and GIP, it actually revs up your energy expenditure and fat metabolism. The results of the phase 2 trial for retatrutide were wild. At the highest dose, people lost roughly 1/4 of their body weight over about a year, up to 25%. That is territory no single hormone drug has ever touched.
Right. And the strange part is, as these drugs get more complex biologically, the way we take them might actually get simpler. Because we're currently looking at weekly injections for these, right? But isn't there something else on the horizon?
Spot on. We're already seeing a 6th wave. There's an oral non-peptide drug called orforglipron moving through phase 3 trials in 25. If the injectables solved how well these drugs work, these cheap daily pills could completely solve the access problem.
Right, and if you actually try to read the science on these GLP-1 drugs, you run headfirst into this massive wall of capitalized words. It is a total alphabet soup of clinical trials. Sustain, step, surpass, surmount. Honestly, it sounds like some aggressive self-help seminar. It really does. Very rise and grind. But look at these trials not as dry corporate jargon, but as the literal engine room of the whole phenomenon. These are multi-thousand patient, randomized, placebo-controlled machines. They're what took a promising hormone and turned it into an approved drug. Right, and there is a method to the madness once you decode them. Let's start with semaglutide, the chemical behind Ozempic and Wegovy. If a trial is testing semaglutide for type 2 diabetes, they call the program Sustain. But if they're testing semaglutide for weight loss, the program is called STEP, which is actually an acronym, Semaglutide Treatment Effect in People with Obesity.
Ah, STEP is semaglutide for weight. That's actually pretty clever. What about its big competitor, tirzepatide? Because I feel like I've been absolutely drowning in SIR words for that one.
Oh, Eli Lilly went all in on the SIR prefix. For tirzepatide, if they're testing it for diabetes, the trial program is called SURPASS. In fact, SURPASS-2 was that famous head-to-head trial where tirzepatide actually beat semaglutide on both blood sugar control and weight loss. Now, if they're testing tirzepatide for weight loss, the trials are called SURMOUNT, like SURMOUNT-OSA, which tested it for obstructive sleep apnea.
Right. SURPASS is diabetes, SURMOUNT is weight. But wait, what about SELECT? Because that's the one cardiologists were practically shouting about from the rooftops.
Yes, SELECT is the massive outlier, and it's a huge deal. That was the landmark cardiovascular outcomes trial for semaglutide. They looked at patients with heart disease and obesity, but crucially, without diabetes. And they proved semaglutide was superior to placebo at reducing the risk of heart attacks, strokes, and cardiovascular death. So when you hear these acronyms, they're not just marketing labels. They are the literal pillars of evidence that proved these drugs work at scale.
A network of hidden radio towers scattered across your body. That is essentially what we are dealing with. Not just in your gut, but in your heart, your kidneys, and deep in your brain. For years, we thought we were only broadcasting a signal to the pancreas to manage blood sugar. But it turns out, all these other organs have been listening the entire time. This is what blew scientists away. GLP-1 receptors are everywhere. When we turn up that signal with these drugs, we aren't just treating diabetes. We're actually triggering a whole body cascade of benefits that nobody originally planned for.
Hold on. We're talking about actual structural protection for other organs, not just the indirect benefit of losing weight? Because honestly, if my knees hurt less because I weigh less, that makes sense. But this sounds like the drug is directly intervening in places like the heart. What are the actual numbers here?
You've hit on the exact distinction researchers are making. It is direct. Take the heart. In the massive SELECT trial, semaglutide actually cut the combined risk of heart attacks, strokes, and cardiovascular death in people with obesity who didn't even have diabetes. It's a cardiovascular drug now, and it doesn't stop there. On January 28, 2025, the FDA approved it to slow down chronic kidney disease. It's actively shielding the kidneys from damage.
Another number that really caught my eye is for sleep apnea. In December 2024, tirzepatide became the first ever drug approved for obstructive sleep apnea. And the scale of it is wild. In trials, it cut breathing interruptions during sleep by 50 to 59%. For people who have survived on those loud CPAP masks, a 50% reduction is a massive quality of life shift.
It really is. The fact that a metabolic drug can replace a CPAP machine for some people is staggering. But there is one organ we haven't even touched yet, and it might be the most fascinating frontier of all.
Okay, here's the thing that really blows my mind. We're talking about a metabolic drug, right? But some of the most fascinating effects are happening entirely in the brain. People taking these medications started reporting that this constant background clamor, what they call food noise, just vanished. It was suddenly quiet.
It's like turning down a roaring television in the next room that you didn't even realize was on until someone hit mute. And that quiet isn't just about pizza or cookies. When you think about it, food noise is really just the brain's reward system on high volume. So when these drugs dial down that appetite and reward circuitry, people are noticing they also lose the urge to drink alcohol or smoke cigarettes. The physical cravings for these other habits are getting quieted too.
They are actually reducing cravings for things like alcohol and nicotine? That is wild. Is there hard data on this yet, or is it still mostly stories? Because if we are talking about rewiring how we treat addiction, that is a massive shift.
Right now, it is early. We have lots of clinical reports and early stage trials, but it's not a settled medical fact yet. But researchers are incredibly excited because the biological pathway makes complete sense. The GLP-1 receptors aren't just in your stomach. They're sitting right inside the brain's reward centers. You're essentially dampening the signal that says, hey, do that highly rewarding thing again.
And it goes even deeper than behavior, right? I've been seeing headlines about neurodegenerative diseases. We're talking about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. How does a diabetes drug even begin to touch something as complex as Alzheimer's?
Well, think of the brain under siege from chronic inflammation, which is a major driver in both Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. What researchers are finding is that GLP-1 pathways can actually reduce inflammation in the brain and the body. There's active research into whether these drugs can shield neurons from that inflammatory damage, acting as a kind of protective shield. Again, it is early days, but it's the kind of potential that makes scientists think we might have stumbled onto something far bigger than just a weight loss tool.
It's honestly incredible. We started with Gila monster venom to manage blood sugar, and now we're looking at a tool that might protect the aging brain and treat addiction. It really makes you realize how connected everything in our biology actually is.
It's basically a velvet rope. It lets you into this incredible metabolic party, but the bouncer at the door is demanding a really high cover charge. As much as we talk about these drugs being a medical revolution, we have to look at the very real physical toll they can take on the body.
Right. And the strange part is that the main downside is literally a direct consequence of how they work. We are talking about major gastrointestinal issues, right? What do the clinical numbers actually look like for people taking these?
They aren't trivial. Think of your digestive tract suddenly running in slow motion. In a meta-analysis of obese patients without diabetes, about 31% of people on semaglutide experienced GI side effects, compared to just 13% on a placebo. And if you look at the dual agonist, tirzepatide, that number jumps to nearly 80%, compared to 25% on placebo. Nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, it is the primary reason people end up throwing in the towel.
80% is a massive jump, even if most of it is mild to moderate. But what happens if you do stop? If the side effects get to be too much, or if you can't afford the steep price, or if the ongoing supply shortages hit you, do you just go back to where you started?
That is the most sobering reality of these drugs. If you turn off the signal, the body reverts to its old settings. The clinical data shows that the weight tends to come back once the drug is stopped. It isn't a permanent reset. It's a chronic treatment for a chronic condition. It is basically a lifelong commitment. You also have rare but serious risks like pancreatitis and gallstones, the latter of which is often tied to rapid weight loss itself. Plus, there is a boxed warning about thyroid tumors from rodent studies. And we still do not fully understand the long-term safety picture or how much muscle mass people might be losing alongside the fat.
So it is not a temporary cure. It is an ongoing intervention. It really frames the whole discussion differently. You are negotiating a permanent trade-off between chronic metabolic disease and a potentially lifelong, expensive, and sometimes very uncomfortable treatment. It means patients and doctors have to weigh these life-changing benefits against some very real long-term costs. It is wild to think about. We started with a slow-moving desert lizard, and we ended up eavesdropping on this incredibly complex conversation happening inside us.
It really is like finding a single forgotten word in a foreign language and using it to decode the entire book. But the big question now is, what happens if we stop speaking it, or how it reshapes our relationship with food and health in the long run?
Right. The translation is still in progress. See you next time.